Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Good morning, everyone. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Hi, Sherry. Do you smell that smell?
I always smell that smell, but...
I mean, it's wafting through the city now. It's just like everybody's getting high.
It was already, but
it's cats and dogs living together. It's May. Oh no, it's not.
I wish I could say, what are you talking about, Burl? But I already know. Where were you at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, August 6th?
I was not in line at a dispensary. I was participating in our first news call of the day, but we were talking about dispensaries and the lines.
Yeah,
and
it was
the
first day of legal marijuana sales in Ohio.
Legal recreational marijuana sales.
True.
Yes.
And it was hailed like, I love a good Cincinnatian on a first day of something. Long lines, slept in a car overnight, ready to go. I think this is a hallmark of Cincinnati, and I'm here for it.
My favorite guy was the one who decided he was going to wait in line at exactly 4:20 a.m.
It's the level of dedication,
that is making an event of it. So, I think, you know, we've done so much reporting since last
year.
You
want to know where to buy it? We're your Cincinnati.com, you guys.
I mean, the quick catch up in case you're like, what is, you know, the state legislature approved and DeWine signed the law making recreational cannabis use a thing. It took a while for the state to roll out the licenses. And in this case, they're called dual licenses because the dispensaries that went online for recreational products were the ones already doing business for people with a medical card. So now they have a dual license. You know, we had reporters all over the city. We have, you know, our Ohio USA Today Network reporters all over the state. You know, reports of lots of people waiting in line, but the line moving
joyously.
Quickly. Yeah,
like
joyously.
It was a happy morning.
There weren't tremendously long waits. The state decided to take a lesson from other states that didn't bring so many dispensaries online at once, where there were long lines. So they, you know, most of, I guess, 98 dispensaries went online. So that's most of the dispensaries in the state that were already providing cannabis for medical customers. So the lines weren't, you know, they moved pretty quickly. The biggest criticism people had was a little more expensive here than Michigan, which was anticipated. Michigan has a lot more dispensaries. They have a oversupply of cannabis right now compared to Ohio. Experts predict this will kind of level out soon, you know, that the price will be pretty comparable. The market will do its thing. But yeah, it's, you know, we joked in the newsroom that, especially if you're in downtown Cincinnati a lot, you already smell weed.
And or see people smoking it openly.
So the people who...
Which is not allowed, you guys. You have to do it in private or... with a business that has some sort of outdoor patio that
Correct.
Actually has state permission to do it. It is supposed to be done in private, but I mean, culture is moving more and more towards acceptability.
Right. And a lot of people, you know, we talked to somebody who, or I think actually this was a Columbus Dispatch story, somebody who had not been able to get a medical card, but had some back pain and bought edibles. So it's not just, you know, I was joking earlier that, you know, the smell of bud wafting through the streets. I mean, you kind of smell it around here, but it's not like there was an appreciable difference, like all of a sudden
no.
with the
and honestly,
sale of recreational. It was,
if you've
you know,
been to Michigan, you know, these aren't like shady, like, you know, corner store type of, you know, you're not like, what's going on in there? They look upscale. You can't really tell. A lot of them have like cutesy names. And you're like, is that a plant store? What's in there? I think they know that they're trying to capture an audience that's more for like the youth audience is looking for a more upscale experience when you're doing it.
Right. Oh, well. Well, Sherry, I got to tell you, I'm kind of like on a natural high.
You are?
I am. Because we have a very special guest this week.
Somebody we tried to have on the podcast a long time.
We have been trying to get this guy for a long time. So before I say who he is by name, let me read.
Especially considering I forgot to mention him at the beginning.
Oh, no, I'm glad you didn't.
Okay.
All right. So our listeners are probably like, well, who is their guest?
His name will be on what you click on, but it's fine.
Well, maybe not.
Oh,
maybe,
no, I dropped a hint. It's a
maybe they're driving in the car.
Okay. And
they finished a podcast and it just kind of pops up, you know, ding, 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 ding. That's our theme music, right, Phil? Yeah. Okay. 4 National League pennants, 2 World Series, 14-time All-Star, 2-time National League Most Valuable Player, leading the Reds all-time home run list with 389, and a 10-time Gold Glove catcher.
That can only be one person.
It can only be one person. The greatest catcher of all time, Johnny Lee Bench, is our special guest.
We've tried to have him on for a long time, guys, but he does live in Florida. We do like to do this in person. So that was kind of tough. He comes back here for some charity work. A press release kind of came across my desk of he has a partnership with the Hard Rock Casino Cincinnati. And I was like, this is it.
This is our
this
time.
This is it.
Yes, Johnny was in town. He is promoting the Johnny Bench menu at the Charter Oak Steakhouse at the Hard Rock Casino.
Council Oak.
Or I'm sorry, what did I say?
Council Oak.
Council Oak. Yes. Did I say that?
I hadn't been to in a bit, and I was reminded about how amazing it is. You don't think that about the steakhouse and the casino, and it does not get enough love, but they put on, and everyone I've talked about it this week is like, oh yeah, that's a great steakhouse. People do really, they know it in their heads if they're not running around talking about it.
Right.
So, but there's menu items that he actually helped create, like a red snapper. He's a big fisherman. He kind of did have some input in what this would all look like. A funnel cake apple pie that's in a funnel cake shaped like a catcher's glove. It was adorable and
yes,
it looked delicious.
Lots of fun. So he was in town. It was quite an event at the casino, and he was gracious enough to sit down with us.
At the casino. It was so fun.
At the casino to be our guest on the podcast.
How's your back, Phil? He had to throw all the equipment on his back and bring it over there. You good?
Well, without further ado, let's talk to Johnny Bench. Welcome to special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. We are not in our studio. We're sitting at the Hard Rock Casino at the Council Oak Steakhouse, and Johnny Bench is next to us, Sherry, with a big old plate of dessert. So this is going to be an untypical podcast.
I am so excited for two reasons.
It's about time you guys released and got out and went into the real world.
This is true. We've been doing that more, and I feel like we'll keep doing it. But I'm very excited to be here with Johnny Bench, one of the all-time great Reds players. But I'm also excited because no one ever wants to eat dessert with me, and here we are. So
and
you
I
might be my
fork.
Favorite guest ever.
I gave you a fork.
You
can
did.
Do it right there in
okay.
front of you. We'll do it.
So thank you for being on the
Where'd
podcast.
Where'd you get the shirt, by the way?
You know, I'm going to plug a good friend of mine. His name is Jim Elkus, Bolero Menswear. Right
Jim
down
Elkus, from the Elkuses and Elkuses and Elkuses have been here for 100 years. Bob
yes.
Elkus.
Yes.
Bob Elkus was my guy.
Bolero's Menswear. Yes, exactly. Right down from Fountain Square.
You got to do that.
It's my lucky shirt.
Yeah.
I was feeling nervous today because, we're interviewing Johnny Bench, and I have to like be unprofessional now. And
it takes you 5 years to learn to play. It takes you 5 minutes to look good. You look fabulous. You look fabulous.
Keep five
it
minutes, Tom Burrow.
That is high praise.
Well, are we still on subject here?
I'm one of those Cincinnati kids that grew up idolizing Johnny Bench. I fought out a friend of mine to play catcher on my little league team because of Johnny Bench. And the first time I met you, you probably won't remember. You were we both worked in the same building, so to speak. Because the Enquirer offices were at 312 Elm, and right above our newsroom, the 20th floor was Castellini's. And you got on the elevator as I was getting on the elevator.
We actually had Hanna-Barbera. We had Hamilton Projects, which was where my agent came out of.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's where you're in the same building most of the time for that.
So what I learned about you that day, because I had my almost newborn son with me. It's the first time I brought him into the newsroom.
This was a while
and
ago.
You got on the elevator and you said, oh, you got a new baby. And you said, I got one of those too. So we both have high school seniors that just graduated.
We do. Yeah. Mine's headed down to Florida Atlantic University for computer science and engineering.
Well, our sister paper did a story about you in April, Palm Beach Post. And I hadn't seen, since the documentary in 2019 that you were in, I hadn't seen your sons. And here's this guy that's taller than you.
6'4", almost. Yeah, he's taller than both of us put together.
And the story talked about what is well known about you now, that, you know, you are first and foremost, Mr. Dad.
Yes.
Yes. What was it like having your son graduate from high school?
It was awesome. I mean, really, you know, I try to understand your feelings at times from within and everything else. And it's like, you know, now I'm a week away from him going move in, and you're trying to do it. I've got another one, obviously. Josh is 14, but it's kind of like, and he so assures me that he's ready, and I believe he's ready. No, I'm not ready. No, I'm not even close to ready, but he's only 45 minutes away.
Okay.
Which I love the idea of, because I want him to become his own man, obviously, and everything else, and find his own way and develop into whatever it is, and whether it be computers or AI or whether it be engineering or whatever it is. I know I've sort of pointed him in the right direction, but knowing the things that probably I had to go through, I'm 17 years old when I left home. And I went to Florida, and, you know, I knew nothing. I knew everything, and yet I found my way. And you're always concerned with the people that you interact with, who you're going to be associated with, who's going to tempt you, who's that one person that doesn't like, you know, the Cincinnati Reds or heard of Johnny Bench or somebody that wants to do something stupid. And that's the thing you worry about most. But, boy, he's a great kid, and if he comes home, he comes home. If he doesn't come home, I didn't come home. I mean, I was gone for 2 or 3 months and 4 months. And I try to tell people that I was 17 years old and Carl Barnes and Norm Singleton and I slept in a motel, one room with a rollaway bed, the three of us. And whoever had the best night got to sleep on the regular bed, and the other had to do the sleepaway. So
this is the life of a minor leaguer.
It's the life of a minor leaguer. And so he's got a dorm room. He doesn't know who his roommate is yet. He just knows his name, and he says God will provide. And he's a very religious young man, and he trusts in it right now.
It's part of the fun. I didn't know my roommate, and she turns out she was from Cincinnati. The first week she introduced me to Skyline Chili that she had from, she brought in cans as an emergency stash. Yeah. And so that's part of the fun of it.
I guess. But I'm really proud of him. Let's just say that.
Even though he didn't play baseball.
He played and he got hit by a pitch and then he got hit by another thrown ball and he got gun shy.
Yeah.
And but he was a good tennis player. He was a good soccer player. He filled up my nights. He filled up my days. And I guess I probably, you know, I've had some AFib and stuff. I might not have got through it if he'd have played baseball. So I guess, you know, the stress and strain of watching your child play is the hardest thing I think most of parents do these days. But no.
Computer science is an excellent backup career,
yeah,
I'm guessing.
That's what I'm praying. You play in them, you know. How'd you do on your SAT? I only got 1350. And then, how'd you do on your APs? Well, I got 2.4s. I'm like, what? You know, and he's not bragging about it. He's not doing anything. It's just he's just a really good young man, and I'm happy for him.
Well, talk a little bit about, catch us up on what you're doing besides raising those boys. Are you still golfing? Are you traveling much?
No golfing. Still doing a few speaking engagements. The things we're really involved with now is a lot, and we're working called the Princeton Project for Princeton High School, where there's 6,400 students. We're involved in a company called TNI, which is the Neurovisual Institute. And what we want to do is our plan is to test 6,400 students for any kind of learning problems. We want to know about their vision. We want to know if they're, you know, if their vestibular is working, if all the things that go along with it. We want to test these kids and find out a better way for them to learn. and why some of them are not learning. Parents will wonder why they're not reading, why they're not understanding, why they're not comprehending. We actually are set up at Princeton at one of the satellite groups out there, as parts of their school, and we will test all 75. We've got a little combination now with Chillicothe in the testing we're doing. We're talking to Fayetteville right now, and we're hoping that we can test kids to find out why they're learning disabilities, if they have a learning disability, and if we can improve them and a better way of training them to learn. So that's our number one project right now, and we're really actually just at a point now where we've already got the setup at Princeton, and we hope we can take it to a lot of other schools.
And you just wrapped up another year of the Johnny Bench Awards.
College Catcher of the Year, the High School Catchers of the Year in Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky, West Virginia. I hope I said all four states, but we get the high school.
You covered Reds country there. You
boys, got it. Boys and girls, softball and baseball, and then the two top college athletes in the country. And this helps benefit the Community Fund and Johnny Bench Scholarship Fund. Again, we've given out over 800 scholarships to various Cincinnati kids and Binger High School, Binger, Oklahoma, where I grew up. And we're kind of now more focusing on some of the higher level kids that really need they almost all need some help, but we're focusing on these kids that can really use it and it'll be beneficial to them. So we'll name our new scholarship recipients. That started in 84. And then we have a Johnny Mitch golf tournament down in West Palm, Jupiter, which benefits kids at risk, 14 to 18, that have learning problems. And we actually wind up, the school actually winds up getting them jobs, getting them internships, training them. And 92% of the kids who they get jobs for still have the jobs. So their needs are great, and we help a little bit.
Your good friend Denny Jansen, who's here with us, told me earlier that some of the recipients of the Johnny Bench Awards have gone on to play in the majors. So that's got to be something you're proud of.
We've had, like, at one time we had 14 kids that had been nominated. At one time there were 3 kids on the nomination, and then we had them all in. It's easier to just do the one. But we had 14 one season that was in the major leagues. So these are the top-of-the-line kids. We grade them. Bobby goes through my son Bobby goes through all the kids, all their stats and everything else. We sit down together, and I sort of make the last pick as who's our defensive player of the year. Plus, of course, they have some offense going with him. And this year it was Cole Messina from the University of South Carolina.
That's fantastic. Denny also was very proud because you have a grandchild.
My first one.
Whose middle name?
Lewis Jansen Bench.
That's fantastic.
Isn't it? Yeah.
So now Denny's in the family, I guess.
I'm so proud of my son, Bobby, for thinking of him. In fact, he had a name picked out, if it was a girl, Patricia, after Pat Barry.
Oh, wow. The late,
I know.
Great
I miss him.
Media personality.
His picture and my boys sit right there on my little thing every day and my desk right there in my office. Yeah.
And you know what else Denny told me? We need to congratulate you. You're a newlywed.
Yeah, pretty much, March.
Yeah.
Wait, what? I did my research, not well enough.
Who's
apparently
the best reporter here, Sherry, me or you? I got the scoop from Danny.
Look at me.
We're going to take a poll on that later.
Yeah, we met.
Congratulations.
We met 7 years ago where our sons played soccer together, and she thought I was a coach, so she never knew. She knew nothing about baseball. She thought I was just a soccer coach.
She didn't know who you were.
No, and she was married at the time, and you know, and then 3 or 4 years later, she got divorced, and then had moved by that time, and then she moved back, and we kind of started back together hanging out, and we started hanging out and said, ain't love grand. Yeah.
Well, so, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm always shocked when people don't know who you are, but that's a great story. The second time I met you.
I didn't recognize you right away.
Well,
because he's so fashionable today.
Me meeting Johnny Bench is a lifetime moment. You meeting me is something else. The second time I met you, it was another case of someone not knowing who Johnny Bench was. You were playing in the celebrity pro-am at Lake Tahoe. Yeah. And I was the editor out in Reno. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but we decided we were going to go out there and get all the celebrities. You know, we brought our videographers and photographers and stuff like that. And there was a young reporter who I was standing next to. And I was like, Siobhan, there's Johnny Bench. You need to go talk to Johnny Bench. He's the greatest catcher of all time. And she's like, okay. She walked right by you and went to Cheech Marin from Cheech and Chong and said to Cheech, Mr. Bench, may I interview you? And you turned around and looked at the two of them and just laughed. You were very gracious. But yeah, I'm always shocked when people
I'm guessing she was younger.
You know, you have to be 50 years old, really, because back in 1975, it was when our great years were. You know, you had to be born at that time by 1965. So you got to be in your 50s to even remember the Big Red Machine.
Not here.
Which eliminates you.
You're indoctrinated when you live here in a good way.
When you were part of the Big Red Machine, were there like former Reds players around, like you're around, and some of the other players today are like just, you're such a Reds family? It seems like so many people are folded in. Did you have that as a young player? Like you're giving today?
Well, you know,
today?
Remember Joe Nuxall was there forever. He didn't know it. And Tootie, we call him Tootie O'Toole. You know, O'Toole was there. You know, Jim was one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in your life. You know, there's not a lot of the players that have stayed around. They're, for whatever reason, they've never gotten jobs in the community or worked in the community. Leo Cardenas worked out here at a gas station. I mean, we could take what we wanted and do it. Jerry Arrigo worked out at Rivers Downs. It was not so much, you know, but guys, remember, they grew up in California. They grew up in Vegas, and they had to go back to try to find a job, or they had something back in their hometown. So they had to go back and find a job. You know, my first year after the season over, I refereed basketball games in Oklahoma. And then I became a speaker, a community speaker for the Reds Fund. And that's how all the my, you know, motivational speaking started. So it's been you do and be where you are. And then you got a wife who lives somewhere and wants to be next to her family. And it's just hard to do that. We only had a few guys here.
Well, speaking of those speaking engagements and endorsements, we got to run down the list. I mean, spokesperson for Fifth Third.
Was.
Aqua Velva.
Was.
Yes, all of these things.
Wait, is Aqua Velva still a thing?
No. And I cannot spray paint anything.
No runs, no drips, no errors.
That's the one. No matter what I'm spray painting, whether I'm using Krylon or not, after I spray paint and admire my work, I go, no runs, no drips, no errors.
That's a successful campaign if it sticks in people's heads.
I'll never forget it. It was fabulous. You know, touch in 12 minutes.
My parents weren't huge baseball fans, but they loved you on Hee Haw. You know, you were just.
It's amazing
you were just everywhere.
YouTube would be. I was never afraid. You know, that's why was I successful? Because I got my butt out there and you know, I marketed myself. You know, I was on Johnny Carson twice. I was on Letterman twice. I was on Mike Douglas. I was on Dinah Shore. I was on the Pat Sajak show. I was on Gomer Pyle's show. I mean, I did.
You had your own show.
I had Yes Dear. I had the Games People Play. I had the Johnny Bench MVP show. I had the Golf in Paradise. You know, it's amazing what happens if you really put yourself out there and work your butt off, and you're not afraid to be go on a show and then get up and sing. Not that anybody ever asked you to, but they want you to. You know the words, so they're doing it. So it's all promoting yourself.
Do you look back now and think, did all that really happen?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, people talk about what I do with baseball. I couldn't imagine some of the things that they say I did. I mean, I got I probably have 10 concussions and 17 broken bones for sure. But I probably had 10 concussions. So if you ask me a question and I don't know the answer, don't be surprised. I'm surprised too.
You would not guess that today. I saw you interacting with the media. We're at the casino for a reason, because they're starting their Council Oaks Steakhouse.
Yes.
Is starting a Johnny Bench menu.
Yes.
So that's kind of what lured us in today. But I watched you interact, so you would never guess that. You would never guess kind of what your age is, and you're just you don't seem much younger. So
Thank you. I was back in Oklahoma and Bingard, and I asked Sharon Scott, who was the vice president of her class, I said, Sharon, do I look 76? She said, no, but you used to.
I get it.
So I have to ask you baseball things.
Uh-oh.
How do you feel about the pitch clock? And would you?
I love it.
Yeah?
Hell, I got nowhere to go.
As a player?
Sure.
Why?
Why wouldn't you? Why are you waiting around there standing out there? Why are you going to see a guy get out of the box, fix his glove?
I don't know, but sometimes your pitcher might need, to get his thoughts you know, get his mind.
They're only out there for 80 pitches. Where in the hell thought do they have? Then they got an earplug in their ear, and I don't even have to call a game anymore. No, let's get this thing going.
All right, good.
That seems to be, we've asked some other people, that seems to be a unanimous answer.
It really should be. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's, but, you know, what the hell are they doing out there? I mean, they got nothing else to do, just wind up and throw. I mean, we used to play games in minute 40 back when I, or an hour 40 when I played. And so I like it. Next question.
Next question is the extra innings rule where you start a runner.
Don't like that.
I don't either.
No.
And I hate they call it a ghost runner because if you've ever played like 4-on-4 baseball,
You ever look at the baseball executives? You ever look at the baseball executives? You think they'd come up with a name? We could have come up with that. You and Sherry is Sarah.
Yes.
You could come up with a better name than that. I mean, it's like, oh, thank God. Some writer did that. You know how those people at the...
Oh, those writers.
Writers. Yeah. Those reporters. You got to know about them.
That's true. You don't know you're coining something when you do it, like the first time it happens.
And no. I know who started it, and he's sorry that he did it.
Oh, okay.
It was a former catcher, but he came up with the idea of putting a runner on, and he's sorry that he did.
Oh, I think we need to name names.
Yeah, we
no, no,
no. Okay.
All right.
I like
all
my
right.
privacy too.
How okay. much? I tried.
How much longer are we going to have live umpires?
One or two.
And then we're going to
one
go
more
full
year, probably. What about?
I don't know. They got a union too.
Well, I was sat in a booth in Florida, in Jupiter. And next to the guy, the computer, they have a 12 triangulated cameras, and they were using it down there. And the umpire will touch the top of his head if he had a question or there was a deal. He touched the top of his head. The guy went, strike. That's how quick it was. That's how quick they were able to decipher where the ball was in the zone. So AI knows about you, both of you.
Yes, I'm aware.
Both of you. They've already realized what's going on here, all right? And me too, I'm afraid. But I think it'll be there. I mean, you hate to take a job away, but at the same time, some of these guys, they, you know, they can phone it in. I mean, they're not making the effort. I think that's the way it's all, some of it's
always
been.
I feel like
been.
You need both. Because nothing does replace a human.
Yeah, who do you holler at? Who do you argue at?
Exactly. And that would take some of the fun out of it.
You're not going to get as angry at a computer.
To use the technology, yeah. But nothing replaces seeing, being there. I don't know. Like that. Am I aging
I'll
myself?
Have call
I
you.
Probably
I'll
am.
Have them call you.
Well, we know you're on a tight schedule. I wanted to ask you about this current Reds team. Now, do you still have a formal relationship with the Reds? Are you still advising the president?
Not advising, no. No.
Okay.
I'm sort of a freelance guy who comes up and meets and greets.
Okay.
Not involved in a day-to-day or decision-making.
Are you giving advice? Are you scouting?
I would.
Okay.
I would.
And what would you say?
If I could.
Yes. What would you say?
And they ask. If I ask. You know.
If they asked. What if I asked?
No, the same thing I told them 10, 12 years ago when they came in. You got to get the scouting department. And you got to get the scouting department. And you got to get teachers and trainers in the minor leagues that will train these kids to do the right thing, hit the right way. And I'm not the right thing. I mean, this isn't a thing about morals. This is a thing about learning how to hit, learning how to do things. And yet we still want to know, what's that analytics say? Well, it doesn't. It means do it. I mean, Sparky used to call us in, Pete, Joe, Tony, and myself. And he would ask us what we thought of a player. And we said we liked him or we didn't like him. And that was, who's going to judge him better? We're playing against him. And then you got to have somebody that fits into the lineup. He's got to be on the bench, coming off the bench, or can he back up Johnny Bench, the catcher? Can he back up Joe Morgan at second base? So you need something like that. We are going to better judge that. And now they've got, I heard a rumor that Mets have 73 analytic persons.
That was a very large staff.
73. And they started off the 15 games under 500. They tell me it's a way of getting people on the field that work together and make it happen. So
chemistry, magic.
All about that. Even with yours. Even with yours. You look forward to going to work. You work together. Fine.
Culture is everything.
I agree.
That's it.
That's
thank you.
I agree.
Thank you all.
Well, thank you. We're glad you were on our podcast. You can
happy
be on
to be
any
here.
Time.
Well,
just
thank
call
you.
Us.
Well,
you don't
I'll check your next outfit, and then I'll figure out.
Where Very good.
All right. And Burl and I will be eating in Council Oaks.
That's the other benefit here. Again,
Burl. See, I had a Burl in my high school. I think it wasn't. He was in junior year. Burl. Yeah.
And see, well, and you know how to pronounce
it. It's
an
Oklahoma name. Thanks to the hurricane.
It's an Oklahoma name.
Right.
All right, y'all.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, I can't even with all of that, Sherry. I mean, I mentioned
it. It was as fun as I expected.
It was,
I did not think he was going to be like, I fell in love again. Ain't love grand. I didn't see that coming, but
you
that
know,
was fun.
Like I told him, his good friend, former WCPO sports editor, anchor, extraordinaire, Denny Jansen, was talking to me before the interview, and I had heard that he might have been married. And so I thought I would have to, like, you know, work Denny a little bit to get out. And he's like, oh no, she's a great person. They got married in March, blah, 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 blah. So, that was.
Well, what's the best part about it? When they first met, their children knew each other through soccer, and she mistakenly took him for the soccer coach of the boys' team. And someone had to tell her that that's Johnny Bench.
I mean, it's been a while since, you know, the 70s.
True.
It's been a minute. So, anyway, Sherry, prior to us rolling tape, I asked Johnny, I said, so any topics off limits? And the first thing he said, he looked at me and said, I don't want you to ask me about Pete. If you do, I'm going to walk out of the room.
Now, we asked.
Well, I mean, I've seen other journalists, you know, blow up conversations with Johnny Bench because he's tired about being asked about Pete Rose.
You know,
he has nothing else to
say
about it.
He has said a lot because normally I'm not like, no, you don't get a right to tell us what we can ask and what you can't. But if I thought that this was some sort of pivotal moment that he's never talked about, I would be like, this is a valid topic. He has talked about it to death. I don't blame him.
He's not changed his mind.
Right.
The only thing I was, you know, I wanted our time with him to be not the same old, so, you know.
No, agree.
But in light of the HBO documentary, you know, from J.J. Abrams, Bad Robot Productions, that a lot of people have watched now, it didn't really paint Pete in a favorable light at all.
It didn't?
No, I watched it. It just felt sad, like so sad for Pete, so sad for the city, so sad for baseball. And I was reminded how sad at the time a lot of us felt for Johnny Bench, because when he got the call in 1989 that he was going to be inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, that should have been a huge moment for this town and for him. And that's the same time that the story broke on Pete being investigated for gambling. And so that stole all the headlines. That's all this city was focused on. And so so I had a little bit of a Cincinnati moment in preparing for the our interview with Johnny Bench. So I'd watched, like I said, the Pete Rose documentary on HBO Max. I remembered that years ago, 2019, MLB Networks did a documentary on Johnny Bench that I had never seen. I'd heard about it. And I decided, well, you know, I'm going to watch this just to kind of like get some ideas of what we might talk to Johnny about. And it's the opposite experience. Now, it's an MLB Network documentary. They're not going to go in hard hitting. It's not going to be an expose, but they just basically hung out with Johnny at his home in Florida as he's getting his kids out of bed for school and cooking them omelets. And then there's scenes where he's in his, like, he's got like an office with all his memorabilia and scrapbooks, and he's going through laughing about things he had forgotten. They talk to people from his hometown where he still goes to visit. One of the more funny moments of that documentary is, I think shortly after he got his one of his big awards, whether it was Most Valuable Player, or Golden Glove, or something like that, his hometown of Binger, Oklahoma, population something like 900, decided to have a parade for him. So he goes back to Binger, and there's this big parade, and you know, he's in like a, you know, whatever he's in, a big car, you know, convertible or something like that. And they're going down the streets, and there's nobody. There is nobody out on the streets because everybody in town was in the parade. Everybody in town had to be in the parade.
That's how it is on opening day here, right?
Whether it's the marching band, the police department, the fire trucks, by the time you get all those things, there was no one left to watch the parade. So he said it was great. He went down an empty street, but fortunately there was like a turnaround. And they could wave at each other as the, you know, people were coming back.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Isn't that hilarious? So I felt like it cleansed me from the ick I felt after watching the Pete Rose documentary. So that was my little sensei moment, because there was a lot of footage that I had forgotten about or that I hadn't seen of, you know, the Big Red Machine and Johnny Bench, you know, becoming a national celebrity on The Tonight Show, having his own show, just all these things that I think everybody knows who Johnny Bench is, but it's easy to forget how big he was, what he meant, not just to the city, but, you know, he had fans all over the country. Touring with Bob Hope, you know, just like for all the...
I know, he talked about being on Johnny Carson. I love like old Hollywood like that. And I would have, not sure you guys, that's not what we were there for, but I kind of wanted to hear about all those old celebrities and everything.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, for all the shit that Pete Rose got involved with, Johnny Bench, you know, spent time, you know, trying to make a positive difference. And that came out. And again, MLB Network documentaries are made to like pump up baseball players, and there's, you know,
so there are some
that are hard hitting, but
can I
like
only watch it on MLB?
It's on YouTube now. You can watch it free on YouTube. So yes, if you want to relish some Cincinnati moments of the past, and you're, you know, you can't deal with any more, like Johnny Bench, you just can't deal with Pete anymore, watch that documentary from 2019.
All right, I like it.
I have two thumbs up from me. All right, well, shall we wrap this up?
Absolutely. What a fun episode.
I know. Well, thanks for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time.